It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up! Welcome to another Nerd Up Podcast. I'm Guilty Wilson, and I am joined today by the greatest people in the world. We'll start, I guess, alphabetically.
Eric Billingsley.
Tim Coker.
And you have low standards. This is Tim Madden.
Oh, no. Greatest people in the world. Why? Because it's people I can talk nerdy things about and just be able to... Actually, you know, it's basically whenever you're raising a child and you have that child in their toddler years and you spend all your day going, oh, you shouldn't touch that. Well, then all of a sudden you get one adult to talk with and it's like the greatest thing in the world. Well, it's kind of the way I feel with you guys. It's like, finally, I get to talk adult nerdiness with somebody. So... That's what it's about. So anyway, yeah, we're here on a special podcast. We're going to talk about the movie Ex Machina, which stars Poe Dameron. Oh, wait. What was his name?
Oscar Isaac.
Oscar Isaac. There we go. Well, he played Poe Dameron. There we go. But anyway, we're going to talk about that movie in detail. But before we get into the discussion, I want to let you guys know there are all sorts of ways that you can support this podcast. We'd love it if you did. You can go to the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com. You can order t-shirts, coffee mugs, messenger bags, all sorts of goodies. Also, if you want, you know, you go shopping anyway on Amazon. So go ahead and go to our webpage. Click on the Amazon banner. You don't have to pay anything extra. We get a little kickback that way. It kind of helps cover our server costs for a little while. That way we can keep doing this. And, you know, it's a passion of that we have. We don't make any money on it, but we have a passion that we get to fulfill. So anyway, so that's it. Support the podcast in any way you can. It's greatly appreciated. So let's talk about this Ex Machina movie. Actually, Eric, you're the one that kind of talked us into seeing this movie and discussing it. So I'm going to let you introduce the movie itself and we'll start the discussion from there.
All right. Well, I had a couple of friends recommend this to me and, I didn't see it at the theater. I saw it when it came out on video. It's written and directed by Alex Garland. This is actually, I believe, his debut as a director, which is, you know, makes as much, you know, which is pretty phenomenal in my opinion, because the movie looks absolutely gorgeous. But he wrote a few other films that were very critically acclaimed and very, you know, considered to be very thought provoking. I think the last one was called Upstream Color, but I haven't seen that one yet. So I think this is probably the first I've seen of his stuff. The story is basically pretty simple. This young programmer, played by Domhnall Gleeson, who is also in the new Star Wars movie. He wins a contest that to go spend the week with the owner and founder of the company, who's this complete tech genius. But he's no one's ever seen him. He lives out in the middle of nowhere and communicates through, you know, electronic media. So this is a big deal for his employees. And so he gets picked to do this and they fly him out. It looks like it's in Alaska or something like that. And the helicopter just drops him off in the middle of the nowhere. And he's like, this is as close as I'm allowed to go, and points him in the right direction. And so he gets to this complex. And the character played by Oscar Isaac, the guy who owns the company, at first, you know, it's you know, he won a prize, you could spend a week here. But he presents him with an idea of participating in a Turing test, that's T-U-R-I-N-G, which is, in this particular case, testing an AI that he has created to see if it is really capable of thinking on its own. And of course, this kid who won the contest is, you know, absolutely thrilled with the idea because he's a tech nerd too. And, you know, the idea of someone actually creating an AI is intriguing to them both. And as it turns out, the AI has been made in the form of a woman, although she has a face and she has hands, but the rest of her is metal. And, you know, you can see her inner workings. It's just the special effects on the film are remarkable. And I love the way that they envision this character played by Alicia Vikander.
Especially on such a low budget.
Yeah, this was a low budget film, but it doesn't look like, I mean, it's just that everything just looks remarkable. But as you might guess, there's more to it than just testing the AI. And there's a big question of, you know, who's testing who and what each of them have an agenda. You don't always know what that is. But that's just the story. There's so much more going on underneath this. And I noticed a lot of people online have been bashing the film because they're like, oh, this is so unoriginal. I've seen this before. And I have to think that these people are only watching the film for its surface elements and they're not getting what's under the surface. The subtext in this film is saying much more than what the surface is, for lack of a better term. It's, I think, at the top of the list of what this film is about is the proclivity for men, and I say that, you know, in quotes, not all men fall into this category, but it is a generalization, and the desire to possess a woman, that, you know, they don't see them as an equal, they see them as a possession to collect. And I think that is really, you know, the jumping off point for this whole story. Well, I'm going to go ahead and stop there and let you guys pick up and we'll round table this thing. But I'll stop there for now, and whoever wants to pick up.
Now, what year again did this movie come out, Eric?
2015.
Okay, so it was within the last year. So, yeah. Okay. Well, I'm surprised I missed that at the theaters. I guess, did it have a large release, or was it a limited release?
I don't remember seeing it advertised around here. And, of course, I live out in BFE, so that's not all that surprising.
It was a wide release, but a small wide release. It played here. We actually did go see it in the theaters. It was really a great film to watch. I really enjoyed it on a big screen. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, I'd like to have seen it on there.
The other thing I just wanted to throw in here, too, is Alex Garland, the director, was... You definitely have seen his work before, because he wrote 28 Days Later and Sunshine.
Yes.
And he also wrote, he was also the writer for a really good PS3 game called Enslaved, Journey to the West. Really good game.
I'd never heard of him myself, but then again, I'm not one of those that, you know, go out. I'm not a director type of a follower. I'm more, you know, give me an actor, and that's one of my favorite, and that's why I go see a movie. But unlike you guys.
Well, this guy
at least Eric, anyway,
very much an indie type director. I mean, I can totally see him getting offered, you know, to direct a big film. But I don't know. I prefer to think of him as, you know, continuing in the same vein that he's doing, because this is not a big budget film. It's not a blockbuster. It's not meant for everyone. Like I said, I think a lot of people that, you know, they're like, oh, it's science fiction, and they want to sit back and see some space shoot 'em up. It's anything but that. This is the very essence of science fiction. This is taking technology that we have now and just stretching it out a little bit and said, well, what if, you know, what if technology was a little bit more advanced? Because they are. I mean, every tech company in the world is working on some kind of AI now. I don't know that anyone has ever really achieved it, but that's part of what's going on here as well. Is he's supposed to be testing whether this robot is capable of independent thought. And I mean, from the very beginning, she's, I don't want to say manipulating, but she's very aware of what's going on. She knows she's being tested, and in some very real ways, she's testing her tester.
So let's just jump into the main argument here. Is she fully aware? Is she an actual intelligence?
I'd say so.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Considering the ending, yes.
You know, there's a bit of foreshadowing there at the beginning where he's looking in the room where he's going to be doing the interviewing of the AI. And one of the things, you know, there's that broken piece of, you know, chunk of glass, or at least a fractured section of the glass there. And he spends way too much time looking at that thing. Then, you know, there's a broken piece of glass, big deal. But he looks at that, so you know for a fact that's going to be a key point later on.
Right.
And as soon as that pops up, you're like, oh, yeah. At that point, when you see that's happened before he even came there, I think that's proof right there. And that whenever that comes back again, how that happened, I think that right there shows that she was fully aware way before this guy was even thought of being coming out, you know, coming out to test them.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, first of all, you've got the Oscar Isaac character, Nathan, who is obviously an egomaniac, and he's an odd duck, to say the least. And I was never really sure exactly what his motivations were. I mean, I think it's more than he's doing more than just testing her as an AI. I think he actually wants Caleb, the kid that won the contest, to actually fall in love with her. Hmm. And that is definitely her agenda. Mm-hmm. And she has planned all this out. And I mean, from day one, you don't see it till towards the end, but it's, you know, if any of the three of them was, you know, had the upper hand, obviously at the end, you find out who that is. So the question of is her AI equal or greater than human intelligence? Absolutely.
Right. Well, okay, at this point, I think we should ask, are we going to give away spoilers here?
I think we have to if we're going to talk about
okay.
this.
Yeah. Yeah, I think okay. People... this should be their official warning to get out if they haven't seen it.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously, if you're interested enough in the movie to care about spoilers, you could just hit pause, watch the movie, and then come back and enjoy all of our erudition on the subject.
Exactly, because it's hard to talk about a lot of this stuff without it.
Please do turn us off and go watch this movie if you haven't, because I think it's a really, really good one.
I think we all agree that it's an exceptional film.
Okay, a couple things then. One of the things I found, okay, you're talking about her, whether or not she's AI at the beginning or how aware she is. One of the things that gets me, and this kind of jumps back a little bit, but the creator of her intelligence, of her robotic brain, her, well, almost positronic brain, is that he is the creator of a search engine, okay?
Yes, that's right.
Now, I thought that was intriguing. In fact, he uses the algorithm from the search engine and all the stuff that people search for to develop her brain. The only thing I think would have been even more, I don't know, kind of a warning of things to come would have been if he were a social media creator, like a Mark Zuckerberg creating an AI. I mean, that would have been creepy to me. But
I had the sense, actually, that his company was kind of like Google and Facebook rolled into one.
Yeah,
I
kind of got that, too. Yeah. Yeah. But he played more, to me, it seemed like, on the search engine aspect of it, though. But I can see that as well, too.
Yeah.
And I want to throw it, too, that there's so many moments in this film, and some of them aren't necessarily making any kind of statement about the underlying subtext here, but the scene where Nathan does this choreographed dance with this other robot, this Asian robot that he's built.
Oh,
just,
yeah.
I mean, out of nowhere, but I loved it. It was just it felt right for his character, because that's just how he lives out there alone. I mean, the guy is just completely off the scale. But there's all those little touches that I really, really liked.
That's the moment, actually, when you're talking about it, to me, that it becomes clear that the Japanese assistant chef figure is really a sex doll for him, mm-hmm. and one that he has a lot of experience with.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
You know,
yes.
That's how I took Absolutely. That, was that he's, and honestly, that's how I saw the whole thing, is that, he is, what is his name, Isaac, is that right?
Oscar Isaac,
right.
The character Nathan.
Yeah. Nathan, thank you. Nathan has spent, unbelievable amounts of money to create this refuge from the world, this place where he has, like, you have to fly 2 hours in a helicopter before you even see his house mm-hmm. over it. You know, that's how remote it is. That's how isolated it is. And then when you get there, past all of this wilderness and complete randomness, there is something that is unbelievably secure and controlled, and everything in the place is controlled. And
yes,
to me, what you see is it's, the Nathan being kind of the winner of the prize for Mr. Toxic Masculinity 2015, that he's you see that he's been, when you see the history of how he has tried to make one after another, like, there are choices he made when he was deciding what kind of AI am I going to make. Is he making a child, what's his name? Sixth Sense style, that kid.
Oh, right, right.
The Spielberg Kubrick joint AI. Why doesn't he make a kid? Why doesn't he make another dude? Why doesn't he make a neutered being? Now he does give an explanation about sex, and yeah, it's a very superficial, top level, don't ask me about this again kind of answer. but to me, it's really about control. And I think what he wants is an autonomous creature that he can own, that is completely doable and conforms to all of the kind of porn ready standards, because the body is perfectly shaved. There's no inconvenient non porn ready body hair on these supposedly passing for human designs. It's all just what you would want to be in a magazine shoot. So he's not really creating a human being. He's creating a sex doll that is so independent. In a way, it's kind of like, what's his name? Kilgrave in Jessica Jones, where he wants Jessica to honestly want to be with him.
Right.
I feel like what he's trying to do is he's trying to create an utterly controllable, uncontrollable creature, if you know what I mean, something that's his. And to me, I think partly he needs the reassurance of this other guy to say, yeah, dude, she's hot. You know what I mean? Or, yeah. Yeah, she's desirable, to validate his desire for her and to basically say, yes, you've got a real woman here that I want what badly enough to try to steal from you. Mm-hmm. And to me, that is kind of his motivation. Now, there is definitely some like epic length idiot plotting going on in the movie in certain places. And I actually want to ask about that if you guys have a second.
No, go ahead.
You guys have a second?
I got a few.
This kind of comes down to you know, wondering, okay, the guy's obviously a genius, right? But what, like, why is the means of gaining access to different parts of the house the hilariously outdated idea of an ID card? When you would think that biometrics would be the rule of the day because you can't fake it. Whereas an ID card, you can totally take and do whatever you want. Now, did he need to do that so that Caleb would have a chance to move around and do his own thing? And like, did he need something that would be able to be broken? It just seemed a little bit weird to me.
No, I think that's exactly what it was.
I think that's entirely part of his deal is he knows that Caleb is eventually going to want to squirrel away into parts of the complex that he doesn't, in quotes, doesn't want him to be there. Of course he wants him to be there. He wants him to transgress. And that's part of what you're talking about. He's got to want this robot.
Right. And go all the way for her.
And I don't think that there's that Nathan has any question that he has created a valid AI. I don't think he needs anyone else to make that decision for him or to test it. I'm sure that he's come to that conclusion long before he had Caleb come out. He's testing is whether she can pass even without skin enough as a woman and to make him fall in love with her and try to make off with her. That's what that is the final result that Nathan's looking for. And of
I'm
course
not
he falls
convinced that she's an AI.
Hmm? Really?
I'm not convinced that she's all the way.
Oh.
Huh.
So what's the holdup, you think?
The holdup for me is see, now this is going outside of the movie anyway. This has been on my mind quite a bit because not long before that, there were some interviews with quite a number of different tech people, Stephen Hawking and several other folks that I don't remember, discussing AI and whether or not we'll ever have it or achieve it or whether we should or shouldn't. And I don't know that we are sophisticated enough to know when something is not just an algorithm, because algorithms are amazingly complex and we are easily fooled as humans. And so I don't know that there's ever a way for us to independently verify that something actually is an intelligence or just an incredibly great simulation of it.
Well, there's that, and it's been about 3 weeks since I watched this. So I just remember being kind of taken aback by the final shot in the film, where she's escaped. She's in, you know, like, I love the bit with her peeling the skin off of the other sex bots to make herself complete and make herself passable. But she's in the city somewhere. I wish I could remember specifically, but it just, there
probably was probably Seattle, right?
Yeah, I think it was.
I don't know. But I had that impression, but I don't know why.
There's this, well, it, yeah, it, I mean, it could be, yeah.
Yeah.
But there was something about her expression. I need to go back and watch that, because that last shot, it was intriguing, but I couldn't figure out what they were. I know that the director sang something with that last shot, and maybe this ties in what you're saying, Tim Madsen, that, you know, maybe that is the limit of her ability. Can she? I mean, they're asking us, can she fit in as a human being? Mm-hmm. But they don't answer it for us.
Well, I think to me that final scene. I know what you're talking about here. But basically, that final scene, I think to me was the old favorite, you know, I want to be a real boy thing. You know, the Pinocchio, Data from Star Trek, and all that stuff. Because one of the things in the interview, they said, well, what would you do if you were out there? And she said she would stand in a busy street corner just watching people.
Right.
And learning human things. Basically, she'd want to learn more about humans to become more human. And I think that's what, to me, that's what I got from that final scene. It was just like, okay, how do they really act? I want to be a real boy, or a real girl, actually, in her case. So, I don't know. That's, to me, all it was. That's all I got from it.
I don't know. I mean, for me, I think there's nothing more human than wanting to be, to have a connection to other humans, to mm-hmm. have a connection to not necessarily all other humans, but some, a specific number of small number of humans, like a spouse, a significant other, your yeah. children, something like
meaningful
that.
Relationships.
There's nothing more, exactly. There's nothing more human than relationships. And she does not form any relationships. And
that's
I
true.
Don't think going forward, I don't think that there's a possibility that she'll ever have relationships with humans. That's why I don't know that she is actually fully and a separate intelligence.
Well,
or
no,
or
but
she's just
the,
a really great simulation of a human.
Well, okay, here's the thing, though. She can be intelligent, but not in, she could be an intelligence, but not be human. You know what I mean? We are defined by our limitations, which she doesn't actually possess. She's something else. So that's the question is, like, to me, watching the movie, I buy that she is intelligent because she shows the ability to learn increasing complexity. She outthinks both of those dudes. She gets out there and who knows what happens to that poor helicopter pilot. You know, so to me, I buy that she's intelligent, you know, and sentient. I just don't think she is human. And I think that's the thing, is she's always going to be on the outside looking in, no matter who she's dealing with.
And whether that okay. is a limitation of her programming, or if it's because, I mean, look at the two people that she's had as an example, and one of who actually programmed her has no real emotion. I mean, nothing, you know, nothing, at least not any positive emotions. They're both wanting to use her in their own ways. You know, they both want to possess her. They're both trying to manipulate her. And of course, she ends up manipulating both of them. But is that what, you know, that is her exposure to humans? Is that why she's aloof and why she will never be able to create, to have any kind of an emotional connection to a human being or any other creature for that matter? Or is it a limitation of her programming?
I don't right. think she has it in her to do that. That's the thing. I don't know that it's part of her, who she is, to form relationships with others.
But of course, at the end, I mean, I'm sure you guys felt the same. I mean, I was rooting for her. I mean, you know, the guys got pretty much what they had coming to them.
yeah, that's for sure.
I would say Caleb didn't really deserve to die for what
no,
happened to him.
That's yeah. I agree 100%. Caleb
like,
didn't deserve what happened to him.
He was just a probably reasonably decent, normal guy who got dropped down in the middle of, you know, a crazy person's craziness and
well,
had to deal with it. But I don't know. I didn't look at him and say, man, that guy is such a dick.
I felt like he was, I didn't really feel like he was so much in love with her as he wanted to possess her in a similar way that Nathan did.
Well, I think that he perceived her as alive and as somebody that deserved something better than, you know, being in the next addition to Nathan's, you know, forbidden closet of mystery.
Right. Yeah.
But do you think if he had succeeded in his plan and got her out of there, do you think he would have just set her free? Or, I mean, I don't see that happening. I see him as trying to make her part of his life in whatever way he could. Now that may be completely innocent, but it just, there was such a theme of possession and control that I don't know, it kind of bled over into him. I mean, he's obviously nowhere near as deranged or sociopathic as Nathan, but I questioned his motives, and I don't know if that was just me or if that was, you know, something intended in the film. I mean, did he deserve to die for that? No, but you know,
no.
I don't think that his intentions were necessarily altruist.
Well, I'm with Tim. I think he's very much just an average dude. I mean, he's very average. He's not even
this
so-called
contest
winner. You know, he's not exceptional. And so for me, that's what really, actually, he's a bit of a foil for her in that he displays positive traits like mercy, and
right.
she does not.
Right.
You know, he's merciful. He sees her situation and her plight and wants to, at his expense, he wants to get her out of there. Even
right.
the sex bot, he doesn't want to have sex with the dancing chef, and he kind of treats her a person in that when she tries to remove her clothing, he keeps buttoning her clothing back up and saying, no, this is not, I don't want this. I just want to talk to you. Mm-hmm. And
yeah, that's true.
And he displays good qualities. And as such, it reflects on her and her lack of those qualities. Yeah. And so again, I don't know that she's entirely a separate entity that is, for lack of a better term, alive or a separate sentience.
Now, on the same,
she does not have,
on the same note here, she never really killed Caleb, though. You know, she did kill Nathan.
Oh, she signed his death warrant.
Well, yeah, but how much did she know about that she actually did? I mean, the guy was a computer genius. He could probably find a way. The computer to everything was in Nathan's, in Nathan's room there. He could find his way out.
I didn't get that. I got that he was gonna spend the rest of his days, however long those were, in that room.
Well, there was no one coming to rest. I don't think it was malicious. I just don't think she cared. Again, I don't.
Yeah.
I think that she's not human. She's something else.
But yeah.
I think she's something else that's intelligent, and based on her experience with humans, doesn't place a value on human life. But I don't place a strong value on the life of pigs, or I wouldn't eat delicious bacon, you know?
True.
Because I consider myself to be on a, you know, above the food chain. And she probably considers herself to be above humans on the food chain. And does that make her not intelligent? No, it just means that she's not human. She's not one of us.
No, she's
also,
like,
she's trying to pass as human. The whole point of her putting on the skin, she wants to pass as human. The only person who could out her as not being human is Caleb,
right?
And you know, so he's a threat to her in that respect,
right. But he was 100% a means to an end, no matter what compassion he showed. She didn't value it because you know, she just sized him up for hired help the minute he walked in, and and she wasn't wrong, you know. So that, to me, that's what it is. Yes, she's intelligent, and it's bad news for everybody because she does not give a crap about you know, about human life, which is kind of our nightmare about AI after all.
True, yeah.
I would invite you guys to look up, there's a trailer that a company called Quantic Dreams made for the PlayStation 3 back in the day called Kara, K-A-R-A. Whenever you get a chance, look that up and then look up their newest game called Detroit that'll be coming in the next year or two. It has to deal a lot to do with artificial intelligence. And I think it's interesting in light of our discussion here.
Definitely will.
And, you know, as anyone who knows me knows that Blade Runner is my favorite movie, and there were definitely shades of that. In fact, I remember there were a couple of things that were, I thought they were direct references to Blade Runner. I can't remember what they are because it's been a few weeks. But whereas in Blade Runner, you know, those robots or those androids felt more than human beings did. That, you know, that was the whole movie was what defines humanity. And at the end, we find out that, you know, these manufactured creatures have more humanity than many of the human beings in the film do. And this seems to be kind of the other side of that discussion or that equation.
Right. Well, I'll tell you what, here recently, I've been revisiting the Isaac Asimov robot detective novels, and the whole premise of those is, you know, what makes a human and the positronic brain of the robots. There's Daniil Oliver, the robot that has the humaniform robot, and the last one I just got through reading was Robots of Dawn, and there's one robot that doesn't look human, but it can read human minds, and I don't know. At the same time, they're playing on the fact what makes a human, and if they are these robots that can express emotion, can pull themselves off as human, I know what happens later on in the series. So in those series of books, but basically those robots kind of take over, and man has to rebel. But anyway, that it's like, okay, the same thing goes here. Are they human? Do they display human emotions? Can they pass the Turing test? At the same time, are they better than humans? Are they like the Galactus of, you know, robot world? You know, they're going to come in like, you're puny humans. We're going to destroy you because we're better. You know, it's like a whole process. It's been explored many times in movies and comic books and books and novels and everything.
Like,
and I think this
Magneto.
Is, Yeah, exactly. Yeah, even Magneto. But I think that's one of the things that really this one, it really left you hanging on the edge at the end of it. You didn't there was no answer, definite answer of which way it could have gone, but there was ways that we could all predict it to be. Like I said, you guys, I got was I want to be a real boy at that final scene. You guys kind of got this similar where it's like, okay, I'm better than you. I wonder.
Yeah.
Well, right. I think that is by design. I think that's why he leaves it on such an open note, because I mean, it's a very thought provoking film. And I think that's the jumping off point where he's handing it over to the audience. He's like, okay, where does this go? Where does it go from here? You know, he's not giving you the answer. And I kind of appreciate that.
Well, no, it's letting the audience complete the artwork of art, you know, in their own mind, which is something that it seems like fewer and fewer directors are willing to take the chance with that now, you know. So I appreciated that, definitely.
Yeah, and I think that's got a lot to do with today's audience. Today's audience wants things spoon-fed to them, you know. It's like, don't leave me hanging, tell me, you know. And I'm with you guys, you know. It's like, I love it when they let me think about the rest of it. But there's everybody else in the world, it's, you know, this whole, tell me, don't make me think.
You know, speaking of not making me think, there was one other piece of idiot plotting I wanted to run by you guys, because, okay, I'll buy the non-biometric identification on the doors, but here's the other one.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it was to avoid the cliche, but in every movie, I feel like where somebody comes up with an artificial intelligence and the artificial intelligence rebels, there's some kind of a fail-safe button or a kill switch or a, you know, post-hypnotic suggestion. Or whatever.
Well, yeah, like Asimov's got the three robotic laws, so yeah.
Yeah, right. And that Nathan didn't put any safeguards in place for himself other than the ability to keep certain doors locked at certain times seems like either it's idiot plotting, you know, or it's something that just exists for the convenience of the murderous ending happening as it did. Or is it another thing where we're supposed to see it as... is this all part of a death wish or something? I don't know. I just feel like, you know, our options are A, the writer needed the AI rebellion and murder of Nathan to be simple and quick, or B, you know, Nathan is sloppy enough not to have thought of it, which seems silly. And then the third one is, you know, Nathan chose not to include it. Maybe he wanted it to be truly autonomous without even the ability to be controlled. I don't know.
I'd go with that later.
It was a little frustrating because it seemed kind of conveniently stupid to me.
I think that it's totally, I mean, he's an egomaniac of the, you know, the highest degree. I don't think that it would ever occur to him that any of his creation would ever turn on him.
I kind of agree. I think it's hubris.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to let that go because I'm kind of the same way. I don't think ever thought that it would occur to one of them to defy him.
Yeah. One thing that was interesting about
this. Look at the way he behaves around them.
Yeah, that's true. He's pretty imperious. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And by the way.
He absolutely is. The way he treats her. Just his general bearing when he walks into a room with them.
Yeah.
He has no fear of them whatsoever.
Yeah.
Right. Which is, bad idea. One thing that was interesting about this is that this guy has written a lot of Danny Boyle movies, which I've happened to have seen a lot of Danny Boyle movies. And for me, I define Danny Boyle syndrome as the first act will be amazing, the second act will be okay, and the third act I'll be rolling my eyes the whole time, which is the case with every Danny Boyle movie I've ever seen, up to and including Sunshine. But what was interesting about this movie is it didn't fall apart and turn to crap by the end of the movie like a Danny Boyle movie does. And I thought that was really interesting. So that maybe this guy on his own has better instincts, or at least when I say better, I mean instincts that don't actually make me mad.
Yeah, I'm definitely curious to see what he's going to do next.
The whole intrigue of AI, I mean, it seems like, again, we kind of touched on the social media and the search engine aspect that they looked at. With social media out there, if there were any type of AI that could glom onto the internet and just absorb human, I think it's going to turn out to be a very stupid AI if it gloms onto Facebook and Twitter. So I don't think we have any worries on that aspect if it uses that to gain its intelligence. But then again, it could always say, hey, well, I'm way smarter than those people. But I
know all the inconsistencies of every TV plot.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so I think, I don't know. I think with This was definitely an interesting approach to AI than what we've seen before. It was one of those, I don't know, at the end of it, there were so many times I kept thinking, okay, Skynet's got to come in here at any moment now, because this machine is taking over.
And we commented on how, you know, she walks away, you know, coldly, just leaving, you know, leaving Nathan dead and the other dude, you know, locked up to his death probably, and doesn't seem to care. But she also walks out on her other fellow AI, who isn't as sophisticated as she is, you know, but so she doesn't feel kinship with that either.
Right.
You know, takes her skin.
Yeah. Well, so that's the question. What's she going to do? Is she going to set up her own little, you know, make shop and make her own replacement parts and make her own, you know, make more of herself, basically? I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good question.
I mean, she's certainly capable of it if she indeed has access to, you know, all the world's online information, you know.
Yeah. I wonder if she had Wi-Fi built in.
But, right. Is she a mobile hotspot.
Yeah.
She's a hotspot.
She sure is.
I don't know, man. It's funny that I think AI, honestly, AI and virtual reality are all things that are going to be pushed, for better or worse, are going to be pushed by the porn industry, because all technology has been. Mm-hmm. It always has come down to what does the porn industry embrace? And, you know, for better or worse, it's a thing that is part
of
who we are as humans. What?
I said it's like the military budget.
Yeah. Yeah, I know. Yeah.
That's weird. Those are the two industries both of those industries are the ones that push our technology.
Mm-hmm.
It's true. You know, killing or procreating, those are our two most base urges, and that's what pushes things forward.
Yeah.
Makes kind of a scary future for AI.
But seriously, I mean, that's why she looks the way she does. Mm-hmm. Nathan made her, he didn't make her to look like his mom. I mean, of course he's going to make her to look like a young, thin, beautiful girl, because if you're going to make a little companion for yourself, you might as well make her hot.
Right.
Yeah, and at all the variations he had. He had like each body type or each type. So
yeah,
well, as long as they all were, you know, kind of uniformly thin and, you know, had breasts that were about the same size and all that stuff. Their bodies were actually pretty the same. It was just kind of ethnically he was trying on different
He had the ginger, he had the Asian, and I guess this girl had no hair, so it's like she could be anything.
Well, it's another interesting thing about it, you know, for a movie that really critiques and interrogates the male gaze and all that, it really spent a lot of time rewarding the male gaze with all of that attractive naked flesh, you know, which you are then kind of turned on by seeing, but also made to feel guilty for being turned on by seeing. It's a weird double standard kind of thing when I watch movies like that.
Oh,
and absolutely. It's a good movie. I'm not bitching about it. I'm not getting all SJW on it, but I just noticed that for a movie where that's clearly on its mind, it was very interesting to me that they didn't really that they weren't too shy about dishing up plenty of that for the boys in the audience, you know?
But like you said, though, they turned around and made you feel guilty about it, you know?
Yeah.
That movie, it wants you to engage in that.
Mm-hmm.
It tempts you, and it actually wants you to engage in it. That's part of its point.
Mm-hmm.
I think that helps make its point, is because it lays it out there and kind of draws you in and lets you, especially the way she first appears, it's very, I don't know, it's kind of erotic the way she moves and...
Right.
Yeah, definitely.
The innocence of her, I mean, it's erotic, and it invites you to be titillated. And then after you're drawn in and, you know, kind of turned on and like, oh, she's hot. And then it, you know, shows you the other face of the card.
Well, then they show you that the inner workings are a bear trap. So,
well, I think that the nudity and the sexuality is definitely intended, because I think that he's implicating, you know, the us as guys, and you know, it's like, look, you know, you're as guilty as he is, you know. And I can also see where you might, you know, think that that's a double standard, but in this case, I really do think that he's saying, look, you know, you're gazing the same way that her creator was. And I think he's pointing a finger back at that, at men in general.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. I would not consider this a double standard at all, because it's used with a definite intention, an artistic intention. It's not just there for us to stare at a nice pair of boobs. it's there because the fact that we are staring at these boobs is part of the point.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's pronounced bubes.
Bubes.
And it's interesting that Nathan made the decision to only give her a face and hands, to constantly remind Caleb that this is not a human being. This is a machine.
Right.
And he purposely puts that obstacle there just because he's so certain of his work that it doesn't matter whether he can plainly see that she's not real. He's falling in love with her anyway.
Right.
Anyways, it was an interesting touch. And I mean, it's not, you might say it's like, oh, it's just an excuse to show off some cool special effects, which were very cool.
Yeah.
But yeah. I think that there's definitely an intention there.
I think there's one other aspect of it at this point that I think there'd be one final discussion for the podcast today. And that's the point. At what point does she stop being his creation and basically creating her own self? At what point was that started? Because, there's one point she was in an individual, and she was no longer his creation because things he couldn't control. If he couldn't control them, then she was no longer his creation. What point do you think that started?
I don't think it's something that happened on screen in the movie.
No. Right.
No.
I think she was already there.
Any last words before we wrap up the podcast?
I have one last word in that Jessica Jones is getting a season 2.
It is? Yeah. Awesome.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
How could it not? It was so good.
I just read that in the news today, which I thought you guys would be excited to hear.
Yeah, definitely. That's so that, tell you what, it's amazing that Netflix, the new network, if you will, they're releasing these things that are so awesome that it's like we're almost, oh gosh, I hope they get a second season anymore. It's like, yeah, they're getting a second season because that's so awesome the way they're doing it. So yeah, Jessica, I'm wondering if they ever get to the Defenders, because they keep getting more seasons. I mean, they're going to just have, eventually Netflix is going to have the coolest network with superhero movies ever.
They're making up. Yeah. And I remember when it was just like less than 10 years ago that there were reports online saying that Netflix was about ready to fold. And then the next thing I know I hear is, oh, they're making their own programming. It was like, how can they make their own programming if they're about to fold? But yeah, it almost, I mean, well, their first huge hit was House of Cards,
yeah,
which is a new season, I think, is getting ready to start now. But what I find interesting, talking about Jessica Jones, which I have yet to read one negative review of that show. Everyone is just absolutely gaga over it. But I've been seeing people say things like the Black Panther. They're like, I've actually seen a couple of people say this, not both about the Black Panther, but other Marvel characters, that they would rather see them on a Netflix show than in a movie.
Yeah, it's becoming the next thing.
I'm with them. I feel the same way.
Yeah.
Honestly, I do. Like, the movies are great. And honestly, the chance to watch, like Tim, I know that you weren't a fan of the action scenes in Age of Ultron. But for me to be able to watch, the entire Avengers team go hauls balls on 500 Ultrons, across a giant screen, that's great, right? But you can't beat the depth of character development we got on these Netflix shows, and the episodic nature makes it feel more like a comic anyway, like it's, oh hey, it's this issue that I got, it's great, okay, now, especially when you can do like more kind of movie of the week or monster of the week kind of episodes, which they don't really do, but it seems more appropriate to me. I don't know,
I think we might see more of that. You know, once they establish that, these first one or two seasons for each of these characters, I think we'll probably get more, not necessarily Monster of the Week, but there'll be more than one. Like, Jessica Jones was one story from beginning to end, and it was unrelenting, and I appreciated that. But I could also see, her doing episodes where this week she's fighting this guy or this week she's fighting this guy. They could really go anywhere with these things.
Yeah. Well, I think with the new Daredevil season, they're going to, bringing in the Punisher, it's going to be another good, And that's what, see, I'm hope, that's what I like about the Netflix shows, is that it's not just one episode fighting a new villain, you know, unlike Flash or Arrow. It's one whole story that they're telling. And yeah. And I think the same is going to go with the Daredevil Punisher. It's not going to be, okay, let's fight the Punisher and then let's move on to Kingpin. Let's move on to Bullseye and, you know, whatever. It's actually going to be one full story, because Punisher's got a great story if they ever let it get told correctly.
Right.
Oh, man. There's really very few really popular superheroes that I'm less interested in than the Punisher.
I'm with you, Tim, but at the same time, I kind of trust these guys to make him interesting if anybody can.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's the other thing. There's also word that they'll be spinning off the Punisher as well into his own yeah. show.
Which seems inevitable. I got to say.
Yeah, I think it is inevitable, but man, do I really not care about that character.
Yeah.
I mean, what's interesting about a guy just running around with guns shooting people? There's nothing interesting in that.
Yeah, he's a very, like, to me, he's like either a 70s social justice character where he's really a villain, you know, a sad conflicted villain, but a villain, or he's a Reagan era, you know, right wing kind of vigilante figure, which is not really my flavor. So
that's,
I
Batman
don't know.
There, so
there you go. But
yeah, and I don't see Marvel going in that direction anyway. Mm-mm. Like, well, especially with Jessica Jones being, you know, very, very on the left. I just can't see them.
Well, no, I'm not saying that it's a right wing thing to do a show about the Punisher. I'm just saying, like, for me, that was always the vibe that I wasn't really into with the character. Right. You know, was this idea that, oh, okay, I get it. You know, you've got to murder them because it's the 80s. But I also think that a good writer can make a good Punisher comic.
Yeah.
I've read them, you know, so. So if anything, I do trust these guys at Team Netflix, as it were, to find something interesting to say about him.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. That's what I'm thinking is, like, you know, no matter what they do so far, Netflix, they've turned stuff into gold. So
yeah.
I don't see them, unless something really goes wrong, I don't see them doing any different.
And I think that we all know that a big part of that next season is going to be because they you know, they stand there. They're two different sides of the same coin. You know, Daredevil tries not to take any human life if he can avoid it. Whereas the Punisher likes to take as many lives as he can.
Right.
Yeah. Right. He's not into mercy.
No.
No.
Which is something that Daredevil did a fantastic job addressing in its first season. So I'm glad. I think if they're going to have to bring the Punisher in anytime, I think it's a really good time to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Yeah. All right. And one more thing before we leave, I'm just going to mention this. We don't even have to discuss it. I just want to say Hateful Eight, it's long. And if you saw Reservoir Dogs, just put that in the Old West and you're good to go. But... guys, I cannot find myself any way to recommend that movie.
Bit of a slog, huh?
Yeah. I mean, there are a couple outdoor scenes that are cool in the big, huge widescreen. But other than that, the first half of the movie taking place in a stagecoach, just these in-depth conversations, it just sounds like, basically, you remember the lunch scene and on Reservoir Dogs where they're all sitting around talking about things? Yeah, that's kind of how this is.
Scene.
Yeah. That's how this is in the stagecoach, but longer.
They shot it in 70mm, and people have been saying, you know, there's been a lot of critics that are like, what was the point of doing that?
Exactly.
90% of it is indoors.
There are a couple of cool mountain scenes. I mean, I don't know if they actually filmed it in Wyoming, but it's supposed to take place in Wyoming. And there's some cool, I mean, they're very few and far between and short, but they're there, and you're like, oh, that's beautiful. But it's not long, and you go back to inside this bar thing or whatever it is, the haberdashery, but I don't know, they could have made it an hour and a half movie rather than a 167 minute movie, so a 90 minute movie they could have cut down, you know, a lot of that 77 minutes, and they would have been nothing missed. There was a lot of moments where there was nothing being said. It was just panning from person to person.
I said the same thing about Django. Django should have ended 30 minutes earlier. There was that final bit was just so extraneous with Tarantino doing that horrible Aussie accent, and just there was no need for it. They could have wrapped up everything at that scene at Candyland. They could have taken, you know, he could have killed them both, but they didn't write it that way. No, let's let's string it out a little bit longer.
And, yeah, and that's the way this one is too.
Like, yeah.
Yeah, there's one scene where I'm going to kind of get a little bit of a spoiler here, but there's a scene where Channing Tatum finally appears in the last part of the movie, and you realize, oh, yeah, he's supposed to be in this. And then the rest of the movie goes on. It's like, okay, we didn't need Channing Tatum at all. So it's like, okay, the character that he played just there for a few seconds, and...
Stunt casting.
Yeah, it was just like, what? Why? So, but anyway.
You guys know where I can get my Tatums channed?
Well, not Sorry. In this one. You don't have time. So, but anyway, yeah, I just can't find myself. And I love Quentin Tarantino movies. I really do. Well, his earlier ones anyway, I guess. But I just can't find any way to recommend it. Wait for it to come on video or something. And it would make a great Netflix series. All right, well, I guess that brings an end to the podcast. So, guys, thanks for joining me once again. Don't forget, support the podcast any way you can. Buy our merchandise. Subscribe to shop on Amazon. Shop on iTunes. All sorts of ways. Just click on the banners on the nerduppodcast.blogspot.com website. And in the meantime, you can get a hold of us in many ways. First of all, you can get a hold of us on Twitter. That's the best way. You can reach me at Gil Wilson.
You can reach me at Eric Bill.
I am... at Tim K has to say.
And I'm at Tim Gone Mad.
So there you go. You can get a hold of us that way, or you can just contact us on our nerduppodcast.blogspot.com page. Don't forget, there's also a place you can leave voicemail. And if you do leave voicemail, we'll feature you on the next podcast if you wish. You can leave us a voicemail, right, and we'll use that and play that in the next podcast.
Yeah,
and
if you think we're all full of crap on our opinions of Ex Machina, or you have a different take on it, we'd love to hear it.
Heck yeah.
No kidding.
And if you think we're, you know, off on any kind of opinion we express, feel free to let us know, because we're open to all the alternatives out there. So
That's right.
We are open. All right. So, well, actually, now we're closed. So that's it for the Nerd Up Podcast. As we say every time, stay nerdy. Nerd up.
Boy, man, I had a rough night's sleep. Boy. Whew. I got a letter from the IRS yesterday, and I just couldn't sleep. Man, I'm dying here. Somebody help me.
IRS problems affect more than just your finances. If you're ready to take back control of your life and you owe more than $10,000, you need to call the Tax Doctor. Their expert staff can immediately protect you from the IRS and state collectors and get you the best possible tax settlement guaranteed. The IRS has recently released new programs geared in helping struggling taxpayers, where you may qualify to settle your tax debt and wipe out up to 85% or more of what you currently owe. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call the Tax Doctor right now. See if you qualify to pay less. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. 800-917-8611. Again, 800-917-8611.